Hey, how's it going? You're listening to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Thanks so much for joining us. This is the podcast where we share and discuss the very best in video game music. This is episode 125 in the finale of our fifth season. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're really excited because for the first time on the show, we're having our very first repeat guest. If you guys remember, a couple years ago, we had video game music legend Peter McConnell on the show to discuss his work on the LucasArts games, particularly
more
those
than
early
just,
adventures.
More than just his work, just in general, just to talk about LucasArts adventure games. Today we're doing a spotlight on the work of Peter McConnell, so we're only going to talk about his, we're actually going to focus on the post-LucasArts era, so all of his solo work that he's done since then, you know, a lot of the Double Fine stuff, Psychonauts, Brutal Legend, the recent Broken Age, as well as the Sly series, the Plants vs. Zombies series, and many more. So yeah, this is just going to be so much fun.
Yeah, we're playing in with a track from Grim Fandango, which of course is a LucasArts game, but we're taking a look at the whole spectrum of Peter McConnell. So we want to obviously start with his roots coming from LucasArts, but then we're going to move, like Carl said, into the post-LucasArts, and we're very excited. We're going to get a chance to talk to Peter coming up real soon. So, well, let's get into it so that we have a lot of good time to chat with Peter later.
Yeah, absolutely.
On.
And the focus of today, especially on the interview, is Broken Age. It's a game that was just released pretty recently this past year. It's a great game. And we're going to talk to Peter pretty extensively about his work on Broken Age. And guys, just so you know, Broken Age Part 2, which, if I'm not mistaken, is probably going to be coming out near the end of this year, maybe early next year. So we're definitely excited for that. So yeah, let's get things started here. You heard the track Smooth Hector from Grim Fandango opening things up. Now let's play a track from Monkey Island 2. Now, if you guys remember on our LucasArts episode, Peter mentioned that his duty was to compose all the Booty Island themes. This is one of the first themes you hear on Booty Island. This is the theme of the shop, the general store. It's called Booty Boutique, composed by Peter McConnell. Let's take a listen. That is such a fun piece of music. Really a nice kind of a ragtime feel there. Really feels like you're hearing it out of an old saloon piano. This is Booty Boutique from Monkey Island 2, composed by Peter.
We're listening to the Monkey Island 2 special edition version, which features all live real musicians. So that's a fun way to hear this track because, you know, it's so virtuosic. But what I love is this performer, I don't know, probably the gentleman, I think there was a guy who arranged all the music, took a painstaking effort to capture all sort of the soloistic choices made by Peter, because like we said, they used MIDI performance back in the LucasArts days, so this is actually, it sounds exactly like what Peter played, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, that track has always been one of my favorites. It's so fun, and it's such a cool point in the game, because when you, for me, I always went to Booty Island first, right after Scab Island. It was like the first island I went to. I think seeing the word booty, I was like, oh, what's this about? And I think it's the most fun island in the game, and definitely has the most lively music.
Right.
It feels like the whole island is like this Mardi Gras party.
Well, there's a New Orleans jazz style that you even get a little bit of that Dixieland flavor in some of the tracks, and it's cool. We talk about that iMuse technology, how they were able to seamlessly transition between different types of music that were kind of locked together on a grid. And this is an example. It's like the whole Booty Island theme follows the same chord structure and generally has some of the same melodies, but each area that you go to in Booty Island has, you know, different variations. For example, when you go into the store, it has this ragtime version, but it's really fun to hear all those solos because, like I said, that's authentically, that's like exactly what Peter played.
And that's one of my favorite things, is to hear the soloing on, you know, the Sound Blaster or, you know, on the Roland MT32. It's so fun. You know, a lot of their scores back in the day were so solo heavy, you know, something like Sam and Max.
Well, that's what really made them stand out from the majority of video game music, which definitely is more kind of input based.
Absolutely. So guys, that's actually the extent of LucasArts today. So from here on out, we're really going to be focusing on his solo career post LucasArts, and we're going to play one more track and talk about it, and then it's time to actually sit down and talk with Peter. So let's play a track from, I think, the first Double Fine game that Peter worked on. This is Psychonauts. It came out in the early 2000s, maybe like something like 2003 or 2004. We're going to play one of the main themes of the game, one of the themes that is in the beginning of this soundtrack. This is The Meat Circus from Psychonauts.
Awesome. This is The Meat Circus from Psychonauts. Now, I think Psychonauts is a dreadfully underrated game. It's so clever in every aspect of it. It just has so much brilliance. And if the name doesn't suggest, it deals a lot with the mind and going into dreams. And so I think Peter really wanted to obviously capture sort of a chaotic kind of sound where anything can happen in a dream.
This is the most playful, goofy,
yeah, it really reminds me of like Danny Elfman. It feels right out of something like Beetlejuice or The Simpsons.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. Such an eclectic group of instruments, too. You have that really kind of like nice klezmer violin mixed with the brass, mixed with... There's so many interesting performances on this track.
What's funny is the nature of the composition does kind of feel like that Danny Elfman where you could picture like a tuba and everything, but the instrumentation, it feels a little bit more at home to a lot of the things we've heard Peter McConnell do lately with some of the smaller... ensembles. An example is like the use of that clarinet. It almost sounds like a Dixieland technique, having the kind of slide up. But then even the bass instruments, like to me, this piece reminds me of things that utilize like, you know, a tuba going bump, 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 bump. But it's an upright bass. So it's like there's a lot of intention that he has behind the instrument choices to kind of not make it sound as much of like a cartoon copy of, you know, music that we're familiar with. It just has that vague, familiar nature. And I think it works because Psychonauts, like I said, is all about a dream. So it just sounds like an accumulation of different things that you've heard. Very clever.
This, for me, Psychonauts is like quintessential Peter McConnell music.
Yeah.
It's so good. So guys, we're really excited. Now we're going to sit down and talk with Peter McConnell. Like we said, this is our first repeat guest. So we're so excited to have him back on the show. Let's talk with Peter right now.
Let's all put our hands together and welcome him back. Peter McConnell, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we're so excited to welcome back Mr. Peter McConnell to our podcast. Peter, thanks again for joining us once again.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, we want to get right into it. Last time we had you on the show, we were sort of more discussing your work at LucasArts, particularly for those point-and-click adventures. But today we're going to take a more broader look at your entire career. And when Carl and I have been going back and listening to some of this stuff, I just keep being surprised at how versatile a composer you are. Do you think that you've kind of grown into that versatility from working on so many different games? Or was that really always something that was important to you?
Well, I think kind of yes and yes. I mean, I've always liked pretty much every kind of music I've listened to. When I hear Bulgarian music, it's like, wow, I want to do that.
Right.
when I hear heavy metal, it's like, I want to do that. And maybe it's because of all the places I've lived. I mean, I was born in the States, but we very quickly moved to Switzerland, and I grew up or spent a few years as a young kid in Switzerland, and there was a certain kind of European influence there. And then we moved from there to Kentucky, which is a whole different world. And in those days, Flat and Scruggs had a local TV show that had bluegrass music on it, And from there, I moved to Kansas and then New Jersey. And we were in New Jersey when Bruce Springsteen was big. So, I mean, I've heard so many different kinds of music and really gotten into all of them.
Right.
So that's part of it. And then the other piece, as you said, I think working at LucasArts did have something to do with it, because part of what makes an adventure game, you know, entertaining and interesting is all the different places that you go. I mean, that's true of games in general. I think it might be just slightly a little bit more true of adventure games, because a lot of the interest has to do with sort of interacting.
Exactly.
In a slow level in a particular kind of environment. And
absolutely. Yeah, I think that's really great that you mentioned that about adventure games. And something that I think is interesting and kind of fitting, I recently had a chance to play through Broken Age. I loved it. Mm-hmm. And obviously the score was fantastic. But something that I wanted to ask you is, well, to me, Broken Age was really, it was a return to sort of a genre that had been absent, those adventure games. So it was really exciting to have you at the helm as a composer again, when we finally get a return to that point and click adventure. On the music side of things, was there sort of an equivalent effort of returning to the old habits from the LucasArts days, or did you feel like this was something completely uncharted as far as how you approach the music?
I think a return in a lot of ways, but a return in the sense of, wow, you know, now we can do it with real resources, you know, well, it was a rather long story that of getting the MSO involved, the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
But you know, I always wanted to do orchestral music on the LucasArts games, and that just wasn't in the budget in those days.
Right.
And so part of it was this opportunity to really do something just on a level of sort of craft and production value that just wasn't available to us.
Well, it sounds like it wasn't on the budget for this game at first originally either.
That's
didn't
true.
You start off with sort of a small ensemble idea?
Yes, that's true. It evolved kind of, you know, as I say, miraculously. And I was doing a project for Andrew Pogson, who is the assistant music administrator for the MSO. And he had commissioned me to do a Grim Fandango suite for the Queensland Orchestra. And
that is so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And Austin Wintry ended up conducting, and it was it was a really fun project. And but it was also a project that involved, you know, sort of getting back into that world and securing the rights from Disney to do it and all that sort of thing. And so there was a lot of sort of back and forth between me and Andrew about during that whole process of getting it to happen. And so we kind of became buddies during the course of that. And then I got an email from him one day when he said, I noticed that you're the composer on Broken Age. Do you think MSO might be involved in that? And I was like, wow, you read my mind, except that, I mean, how could we ever get that to work economically? But it really, the fact, it turned out that Andrew was a backer of Broken Age.
Oh, wow.
That's so
and
special.
So he kind of had an inside view into how cool it was, and just kind of a personal interest in convincing everybody to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a huge effort on his part, especially to marshal all the forces that are needed to sign off on such a thing. I mean, you know, that they're used to doing recordings on Deutsche Grammophon and not recordings for iOS. and I think it was really fun for everybody to sort of get into this new world. So that was a huge bit of serendipity, which is kind of part of the whole picture of doing a Kickstarter. I mean, basically, you know, wherever Tim goes in the world, he tells me he runs into backers.
Right.
And when I was at the Nordic Game Conference speaking about this with Camden Stoddard, who's the lead audio guy, and Jory Prum, who helped with the recording of the orchestra, you know, it's like, well, how many backers are there in the room? And you know, like half the room raises their hand, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
You know, it's just, it's really, it's amazing how ubiquitous the network is. So that was a huge benefit of that.
So were you involved from the very beginning as far as this project, or when was your involvement announced as far as like when Tim asked you?
It was pretty much as soon as Well, as soon as they sort of rung the bell on the funding, I heard that they, you know, raised all this money in a day and everything. And I just sent an email to Tim congratulating him on you know, such a funding success. And he was at DICE at the time, you know, the DICE show in Vegas.
Right.
And he emailed me right back saying, "So, you're going to do the music?" So
let me think. I'll get back to you on that, Tim.
nah, not interested. So yeah, pretty much from the beginning, I was involved in that project, and it was a long evolution, as you say, and I think that in the beginning, we definitely didn't envision having a big orchestra or having right. that as an option. But from pretty early on, I would say there was kind of a determination on everybody's part, and that came from Brian Min, who's audio director there at Double Fine, and Camden, who was the lead on the project, and myself. There was just kind of a real sort of sense that we're going to really as much as possible make this live. You know, well, if we can't afford a lot of people, we'll do something, whatever we can do with, you know. My original plan was a sextet, which is actually part of the score.
Right.
And that was, the original conception was to do the entire score that way. But, you know, you had some of these scenes where it was just like, man, boy, I wish I had an orchestra for this. You know, it's like, giant. What are you going to do in outer space, you know, where you're floating around?
Well, that's actually something I loved about the score, because you do retain some of the smaller ensemble choices, but, well, really, for those who haven't played the game, it centers around sort of two parallel stories and two different protagonists. But what I love is you kind of portrayed the world, like Shay is one of the protagonists in Vela, but you portrayed both of their worlds as, you know, you use some similar techniques. So I really enjoyed when I was playing through the game to hear the little things that you would do to make it sound like outer space, yes. For example.
Greg Rice, who's the producer, he sent me an example. I can't think of the guy's name right now, but it's a composer who does, I guess you might say, trance-like music. Mm-hmm. And also there was kind of a directive there to bring in sort of vintage synth sounds wherever possible. Unfortunately, my CZ-101 is broken, but I did use some CZ-101 samples, and then did some things with, I have an old Lexicon. Back in a long time ago, I was actually a software engineer for Lexicon. That was another life. Mm-hmm. And Lexicon, for those of you who are not electronic gear geeks, is a wonderful high-end company that made reverbs and the first digital delay. And I have something called a Model 93, which was what Pat Metheny used for his sound.
That's awesome.
And it's also broken, but I can get sounds out of it. So there are all these, I got all these sort of broken electronic sounds, and therein, a good example of that is the On a Mission piece, you know, where Shay's creeping right. around the halls and he's finally, you know, got a mission that's exciting.
And some ways I feel like maybe you should have only used broken gear for this project. It is Broken Age after all. Sorry, I had to make that joke.
Yeah, you got to do it. You got to do it. But I did try to do that as much as possible.
No, that's so cool. Something I find interesting, you talked about using the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. Had you already started the process of recording the smaller ensemble and then decided to record the orchestra? Or was this before you recorded anybody that you knew you were going to use the orchestra? Because a lot of the pieces in the game do just have a few soloists. But something I found interesting is you were able to capture so many different versatile sounds from these players. It almost kind of reminds me of the limitations back in the LucasArts days, where the limitations were more about channels and timbres.
Yes.
But here, did you notice a similar challenge when composing for a fewer number of players?
Well, you know, I've done a lot of small ensemble stuff, and it's you know, I do like working small because there's an intimacy, and you get a lot of, I mean, that, you know, if you sit down and listen to a string quartet, you get something out of that that you don't get out of listening to a symphony.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
That is, like I say, it started out being partly a thing of necessity, but it is also just a wonderful thing in and of itself. And like, I wouldn't imagine doing like the cloud music with anything else but a small ensemble.
Right.
It was right for that. And the two recordings actually happened pretty much at the same time. And honestly, I can't remember at this exact moment which one came first. But it was, you know, as I was composing, things began to unfold that, hey, you know, we might actually get an orchestra involved here.
Right.
So we did, and I guess the first recordings that we did were for the trailer that was for the GDC announcement of the game. Mm-hmm. And it was just the strings, but it was kind of a taste of what, for me, of, you know, what the sound might be later on with a small ensemble.
Right.
So I was writing a lot of that stuff, and then, you know, kept running into these situations like, gee, you know, I really have to do French horns here. And does that mean,
yeah,
you know, should we try to just get four French horn players to come in? And would that be enough? And I was really trying, those low trombones. Trying hard not to get out my LA string samples, you know, just trying
yeah,
to not do that.
Did you ever have to fly to Melbourne at all, or were you able to
We recorded in Jory Prum's studio in Fairfax. It's called Studio Jory. And we didn't record it there. We listened in on the session remotely over Skype.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I've done that before with a number of recordings, actually. I've done that with recordings in Europe and recording in Seattle for PopCap games. I listened in remotely. It's Skype, you know, if you're sitting there listening in on the session, works, you know, fine for that, even around the world where there's a half a second delay. You know, sometimes you do get audio issues that come up. And, you know, I've had not in this session, but I've had in other sessions, it's like the whole thing shifts up by half a step.
Oh, God. Oh,
you know, some weird thing happens in the middle of the take. But you just kind of, you know, just listen carefully, and you can usually, those glitches are not very often, and it works fine.
Well, something I'm curious about is something that I really just loved about the soundtrack is you had very kind of subtle uses of themes and motifs. I'm curious as to what was your sort of compositional process, because, for example, the theme that's introduced, the Vela Wakes,
yes.
It's introduced, you know, it's very lush and beautiful,
mm-hmm.
But that little theme sort of follows her around on her adventure in very clever ways. You know, you might not notice it if you weren't paying attention, but I'm really curious as to like how you went about like composing the little motifs to follow around the characters.
Wow, thanks for that question, because someone who reviewed the CD completely missed that and said there were no themes.
I'm not surprised, because it is subtle.
It's subtle. It is subtle. And
because I just remember there's the one with the dun 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 dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
And then you have dun 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 dun, and then that's the
it comes back over and over and over again. A lot of it's just yeah, it's described. I kind of did the same thing in Grim Fandango with Hector's theme, where almost every jazz piece was a version of his theme. But with Vela, very very early on, and I believe it was the first sketch I did for the game, I did a piece that was supposed to, I was got some art, some of Bagel's art that just showed sort of a crude kind of pastel picture of Vela on the hillside.
Right.
So I did a theme for it that was pretty close to what the Broken Age theme ended up being. It was a little bit more sort of Celtic sounding. And Tim, one of the few bits of feedback I got from Tim on the project, he wrote back saying, you know, it's cool, but try to make sure you stay away from the Renfair territory. And I said, okay. Mm. And I actually ran into him in the airport, and he said, have you seen the new art for Vela? And I said, no. And in a like iPhone commercial moment, he pulls up Vela's on his iPhone and says, here she is, and then sends the picture over to me. And I was like, oh yeah, she looks real different. Yeah, we're going for sort of a vaguely tribal elements from different cultures to make that town and to make her dress and so on. And so that changed the quality of the music a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the march, what I did was I took because there was a lot of solo cello and bass clarinet and stuff in the original version, and the harp was maybe a little more prominent. And I changed the theme a little bit, and then I added that march, which has some African percussion in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the harp, it still has a harp, but it's played kind of like a kora, which is an African harp. So there was a little bit of feedback between me and Tim about how that sound would evolve. Then the opening scene, the opening split screen music, and then the march that you get, which happens when you solve the big puzzle in the sky.
Right.
Those were the first two pieces of Broken Age music. And everything came out of those two thematically for Vela. Her themes, there's that music, and then there's also the theme of her grandfather, which is
that's really neat.
Yeah.
That's really neat how their order in the game isn't chronological like that, but that way we sort of get the benefit of hearing these motifs introduced kind of throughout the score. But I kind of forgot that the march theme doesn't happen until that late in the game.
Yeah, it's funny how the sort of order of composing was very different from the order of the game. But the music is written so that it works with the order of the game. And
right. Now, Peter, I have to ask you this. Mm-hmm. Can we expect to hear any of those themes in part two?
Probably. I haven't written any part two music yet. I'm just about to write the music for part two. We're just starting.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, and I've been working on some other stuff up till now, including Costume Quest, which is another Double Fine.
Right.
Also been doing some work for Plants vs. Zombies and Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah, I was actually speaking of Plants vs. Zombies, you've done a lot of games that were a little bit lighter in tone than to some of these adventure games. For example, the Plants vs. Zombies, the Connectimals.
Yeah.
The process for those games, how is it different for you?
Well, just because you might be appealing to more broader, potentially younger audiences, how does that sort of affect your composition?
Yeah, well, Plants vs. Zombies is its own special case because, well, I'm doing two Plants vs. Zombies sort of streams, if you will. There's PVZ2, which is really like the original PVZ, and then there's PVZ Garden Warfare, which is the platform sort of shooter spoof.
Right.
And they're very different scores. PVZ2, my job is to really just essentially to carry on the tradition that Laura Shigihara set down so wonderfully. And I try to stay really disciplined to make sure that we're in the PVC world, you might say.
Right.
And that's a very sort of charming and quirky, really, I see it very similar actually to the old LucasArts stuff. Other than using slightly later sounding sounds, there's still kind of a lo-fi quality to it, which is very much intentional. I just can't say enough about how cool the original PVZ music is, and I just try to keep that tradition going with my own little, maybe slightly... I'm always going to have my take on things, right? But
well, that's interesting because that's kind of like what you did in Monkey 2 when you and Clint Bajakian started to work with Michael Land, and you had to kind of insert yourself into that already established landscape.
Yeah, and that was very much Michael's territory. But Michael had actually done some work with one of the original Wailers.
Really? Oh my gosh.
And, he learned a ton about reggae it's funny, it's like, he's just kind of, he was like born to do that score. And he learned a ton about reggae from this guy, Josiah. I can't remember his last name, but he was one of the original, he was a percussionist in the band. And he learned a lot about how sort of reggae is put together. So he had really internalized that, and he is the sound of Monkey Island. And so Clint and I came in and we definitely added our own angles on it, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I know my tunes were a lot of them were based on actual sea shanties because I'm a fan of folk music, and
which is such a brilliant addition to that those scores.
And there's a little bit of jazz in there too, like, you know, some of my tunes have a couple more out notes maybe than the other guys.
Oh yeah, in some ways it's kind of easy to tell.
And Clint has this very sort of larger than life burlesque quality that to his tunes that came out in like if you hear Dr. Death in Outlaws, there's this really bigness and sort of real great sense of humor that he had in his cues. So and then Mike had, you know, some, two of the best themes that have ever been written in it for a game. and so that was really sort of an opportunity to bring our own little take on a semi-established
assuming you refer to the main theme and LeChuck's theme, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, those two.
Because I agree,
are just,
those are probably the best.
Yeah, they're pretty iconic, and they're both in one game. You know, they're just really great.
Well, speaking of jazz, you were talking about jazz earlier, and it kind of I can't help but stay on that topic. But what's cool is when we're talking today a little bit more about your solo career. The Sly series, I love because you know, obviously there's a big jazz influence, but there's always this kind of sneaky or secret agent feel with so much of the music. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how you developed the sound of that series?
Well, it's just kind of me. I mean, I always, when I was a kid, my favorite show in the whole world was Mission Impossible. You know, and when I would play by myself or whatever, I always had a soundtrack going. You know, I was like the secret agent, and there'd be like that sort of Lalo Schifrin kind of ding, ding, ding.
So this must have been a blast for you to work
on
these games.
Oh, it was a total blast. And the other thing that was sort of part of the pop milieu. Oh wow, I got to say milieu. growing up was Mancini.
Right. Absolutely.
And just there's a. I'm dating myself here, but I really grew up with those Pink Panther movies, and the super cheesy, like, do you know Our Man Flint? Do you know that?
I don't think so.
Oh, go out and see an Our Man Flint movie. It's hilarious. James Bond, Our Man Flint, the Pink Panther movies, Mission Impossible, the Quinn Martin crime dramas from the 70s, those all kind of have similar DNA.
Well, folks, that sounds like that's the inspiration for Sly right there.
Totally. And Mancini sits right in the center of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the Sly series really does have some of those Pink Panther-ish qualities.
Well, it's just so great that there was able to be so much like live performance. I feel like in general for you, so many of your scores have luckily featured live performers, but I feel like in the Sly series, I guess I'm thinking specifically like 3 and 4, there's so much great expressive playing. What's some of the differences of like maybe how that series evolved musically for you?
Well, that was one of the first projects that I did besides Psychonauts that was, you know, that when I, after I'd left LucasArts.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was fairly early on and it was just very lucky for me that, you know, I was able to have kind of a style that fit right in with the Sly world. You know, when I did a demo for it, it actually ended up being that main Sly theme.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
So I looked at Sly creeping around in Paris, and it was just like, this is what that has to be.
Yeah.
I can't really explain it beyond that.
Yeah, I know. I'm very familiar with the Paris theme from Sly 2. That's one of my favorites from the whole series.
And that keeps, that again is something that keeps coming back, you know, right. I do like. And Sly 4 was the first opportunity that I had to do everything live.
That's awesome.
And that was, you know, that was 2.5 hours of live music. That was just incredible. And we did it in Nashville. With some amazing players and
we had a jazz music episode on our podcast, and one of the themes from Sly 4 definitely was like our favorite track that week.
Oh, right on. Which one?
I think the track was called I Smell a Rat.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites.
Very
from that
killer.
Soundtrack.
Right on.
Well, I'm kind of curious, since we're talking about Sly and we're talking about that main theme, we asked you about this a while ago. Are you working on the upcoming film, or at the very least, is any of your music, like some of your themes, is it going to be featured in the Sly movie?
I think the most accurate answer to that question is I don't know.
More to come, folks.
Yeah, so they're as I understand it, they're in very early stages.
Okay.
As I understand it, they're a long way from making those determinations.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk more about Double Fine. Last time we talked about Psychonauts just a little bit, mm-hmm. and you mentioned that it had a distinct Bernard Herrmann influence, which got me really excited because he's one of my personal favorite film composers. Could you talk a little bit about Psychonauts and sort of what the intention was behind the music?
Well, there's Bernard Herrmann, and then there's also, you know, specifically from things like The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Right.
And maybe a little bit of his original Twilight Zone music, although I think the later TV show Twilight Zone music with the theme, I don't believe Bernard Herrmann did that da-da-da-da-da, you know, the one mm-hmm. that everybody... but it's more like the later Twilight Zone music probably had a bit more of an influence on some of the... but definitely The Day the Earth Stood Still is an influence. You know, I mean, he's really one of the finest, you know, sort of on the level of serious composers in the 20th century. And you know, I'm just a huge fan of his. And it's just examining Bernard Herrmann's music is just the same to me as you know, looking at Stravinsky or Bartok or...
Well, it's fun when you look at the classical, the composer's lineage, that it really does go directly into film, and that people who were sort of the 20th century classical masters began working with film. And so it's fun to see how that lineage works. But I completely agree. I mean, he's absolutely a master. Particularly, I love his score to Vertigo. And I don't know, it's funny, things come full circle, but his use of kind of like the vibraphone, and he uses that one chord, they call it the Herrmann chord, the minor major seventh. It's very like whole tone-y. It reminds me of some of the stuff that you did in Psychonauts, and I mean even a little bit in Broken Age with some of the spacier stuff.
Oh, there's plenty of there's minor major seventh. That's funny, and the minor major seventh and the minor major sixth are probably my two favorite chords.
Really?
Too. And because you know, because they have there's an intensity that the higher note, the brightening note adds.
Right. They're spicy. I think you like the spicy chords, don't you, Peter?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's you know, I like a little dissonance, a little strangeness. And I'm more classically schooled, but I understand jazz intuitively. And when I do jazz, that's just a long way of saying I don't really know what I'm doing.
I love that you mentioned like the marriage of jazz and classical, because that's one of my favorite things about your music, especially like there's a few cues in Broken Age, particularly this one, I can't recall the name, but when you're up in Mareloft, the kind of sky town, and you like fall through the clouds, there's a short cue that plays when you get picked up by the birds, mm-hmm. and it's just like so harmonically rich. It is really like, I think it's up there with a lot of the best kind of film cues. I just think it's great because it has that place where it feels like jazz harmony and classical technique kind of marry.
That fusion
together
is so cool.
Well, you know, that's there's definitely a certain amount of Williams in that cue. And John Williams was very much schooled in both. I mean, he studied at Juilliard.
Right.
But he also... As I understand it, you know, the beginning of the original recording of the Pink Panther, mm-hmm. There's a tritone that's played on the piano, right?
Right.
Before the groove and before the sax, there's a tritone, right? It's the first gesture. That is John Williams.
Well, yeah, he also
tritone.
Played on the Elmer Bernstein score for To Kill a Mockingbird. He played piano.
I would believe that. And I, you know, and well, he was Hank Mancini. I guess he didn't. I've heard he didn't like being called Hank. Anyway, he was Henry Mancini's piano player for a fair amount of time. And Mancini, I think, you know, don't quote me on this, but I believe John Williams counts him as a mentor, as one of his mentors.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he also stuttered under Herrmann, I think, too.
Totally. And when you listen to John Williams a lot, there are a lot of jazz moves there.
Oh,
the whole orchestra is doing a lot of sort of... And that's what gives it this kind of American pop element.
Yeah.
That... you don't hear in Bernard Herrmann.
That's a great point.
You don't hear in, well, actually, you do hear a little bit of it in Ennio Morricone. It's a sort of a different version of it, though. It's sort of more American, I guess.
Well, I love these segues, Peter. Speaking of American music, let's talk a little bit about Brutal Legend. Now, mm-hmm. you use a lot of pre-existing music in that game, but I imagine it was a unique process to work on that game. What was the process for choosing the songs, and as far as incorporating original stuff and how it would pair alongside the classics?
Well, I had nothing to do with choosing the songs. That was all Emily Ridgway's brilliance. Finding the right music and being able to procure it mm-hmm. Were quite an undertaking for that game. And you had, not to name any names or get into it in too much detail because I wasn't a party to this stuff, but mm-hmm. you know, you had people who didn't want to be involved if other people were involved and that sort
right.
of thing. So there were a lot of hurdles to negotiate in order to get some of those amazing, you know, original metal tracks into the game. And for me, it was just about channeling your inner 14-year-old. I mean, I wasn't particularly a metal fan when I was young, and yet when I really sat down, you know, and just absorbed everything that I needed to for the score, what I realized was I actually kind of was a metal fan. I just didn't know it. And
deep down inside,
yeah, there's just that, like, yeah, all those times when I was like playing on my guitar and just getting really intense about it, I just heard all that in songs like Iron Man, you know,
right?
And mm-hmm. So it was just, and all that stuff came out. I knew it all because the really early stuff came out when I was, you know, in high school, when I was in junior high.
But yeah, and that game is so special because it puts such an emphasis on music.
It's a love letter. It's a love letter. The game is a love letter to metal, and that part of, you know, what I was trying to do there was really kind of in a way somewhat similar to PBZ, believe it or not, just send a note of appreciation to the creators of it. And mm-hmm. so the really fun thing about Brutal Legend was bringing in the orchestra. And
right.
there have been many attempts to do that, which I'm frankly not fond of.
Yeah.
And the thing about bringing an orchestra into something like metal is, it's, first of all, it is very sophisticated music, and it's extremely technically demanding music. And it's something, of course, it got a lot of sort of disdain thrown at it for sometimes good reasons mm-hmm. regarding all the antics involved with it and so on. And it's kind of shocking to people and so on. But it is highly, you know, demanding music, and part of the temptation is to make the orchestra get fancy. It's because there is an orchestral, metal has, in my way of hearing it, metal has this desire to be epic and grand.
Oh yeah.
And it is epic and grand, so there's already an orchestra playing along with the band in the minds of the people.
Well, it
on
has
stage.
Sort of an innate virtuosity, which I associate with a lot of orchestra performances.
But the thing is, when you bring in the orchestra, it needs to be a rock band composed of a bunch of players of wooden and metal instruments, and not an orchestra. And so, you know, I was very, like, I did all the orchestrations myself, and because I knew that I wanted a certain kind of ham-fisted sound that would involve, you know, breaking some rules that, you know, people would not want to break.
Right.
So I'm honestly kind of proud of the result there because we brought the orchestra in and it didn't turn it into like easy listening metal. It was still raw. It was still tough. And it still had impact. And I just think, you know, and a lot of it is about knowing when to be very simple and mm-hmm. and just support what the just really support what the rhythm guitar is doing. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And once again, Peter, just looking through your career, your discography, even if you're talking about post LucasArts, which is what we're focusing on today, it's just crazy how many projects you've worked on. If you had to pick one, I know this is a tough question, but if you had to pick one project that means the most to you, that you're the most proud of, post LucasArts, what do you think that game would be?
It's always the one I'm working on. you know, you can't do anything without sort of being all the way into it. So
right.
I just always feel that way about the stuff I'm working on. And you know, right now, you know, we're looking at a remastered version of Grim Fandango, which is very exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's you know, an opportunity to revisit something and do what I wasn't able to do, or at least some of the things that I wasn't able to do in the original release.
Right.
And so that's exciting. And of course the Sly series was great because it was just an absolute full on exploration of a kind of music that I find kind of in me all the time. Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare is something I've been working on, you know, it's earlier this year, and that is a, you know, that's a sort of an 80s synth pop score, so it's not like some of the other stuff that I
do. Oh, you know, a typical Peter McConnell score.
Yeah, right. And I can do all these things that you don't normally do with synth pop, like fugues and all this contrapuntal stuff. And
oh, nice.
So, you know, just all this, what I'm able to do with melody on that, because you can really do pretty much anything as long as you keep the drums going. And there's this kind of French Riviera vibe about the score that comes from kind of indirectly, but nevertheless, it comes from the original PVZ sound. And that's something that since it sort of has a European quality to it, you can bring in some compositional sophistication into it, which is really fun. And Hearthstone is another one recently that was, which is sort of like my own guitar concerto for me and some amazing wind players.
Well, I gotta say, so cool. Peter, you are just absolutely fitted for this medium because, I mean, not only are you a fantastic composer, we love listening to your music, but some of the things you were just describing, like the choices that you have to make about, you know, mm-hmm. what style of music to go with and how to kind of fuse genres and kind of create timeless music. I think that's something that clearly not just us, I mean, everyone who plays those games really appreciates. So we're so grateful to have you as an ambassador of quality music in video games.
Well, I really appreciate that very much. You know, I guess it's sort of, it comes from part of it is I just, you know, love all kinds of music, and I'm just lucky that there's this job that's out there that I can do that involves loving all kinds of music.
Yeah.
You
were talking about Michael Land is almost like serendipity would have it that he knew so much about reggae and he got
yes.
to work on Monkey
yeah.
Island, but almost like with somebody like you, it's almost like serendipity has that you get to work in video games, just someone who's as diverse as you and able to do so many different types of music. I mean, what a perfect job to get to work on video games.
For sure.
Ah, shucks. Yeah. I mean, I feel very blessed to be in a field where you have so much creative leeway and so many possibilities that you can work with. And it's almost impossible to break a rule. You know, it's really fun. And I'm just super lucky that I get to do it.
Well, thanks so much, Peter. We greatly look forward to hearing, you know, where you go in the future, to hear more work from you. And we're going to, you know, keep our ears and our eyes peeled about the Sly film. But thanks so much for coming back. You're our first repeat guest on the podcast. So thanks a lot for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much. It has been my pleasure. And anytime, I would love to talk.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Peter. Hope you have a great day and a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Wow, that was such a treat to talk once again with Peter. Thanks, Peter, for coming back on the show. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. We were able to focus quite a bit on Broken Age and in general kind of his post-LucasArts career because that man has done so many games.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the second part of Broken Age, because the, like I said, the soundtrack just felt so versatile to me. He utilizes those small ensembles so much, but like the game in kind of style, like if you've played Day of the Tentacle, where you control these different protagonists in different time periods, Broken Age has a similar mechanic where you control these different protagonists in completely different worlds. What I like about it is the music, it doesn't like drastically change, but there are different cues that he makes to kind of showcase the difference of the two worlds that you're in.
Absolutely.
Really,
so what you guys just heard, you know, just a second ago coming out of that interview, was a track from Sly 4. We're going to play another track from that soundtrack. We touched on it on the interview too. This is Sly Cooper Thieves in Time. We're going to play a really fun track called Tavern Tomfoolery. That is a cool track. You're listening to Tavern Tomfoolery from Sly Cooper Thieves in Time. It's the fourth game in the Sly series, composed by the wonderful Peter McConnell. A lot of influence, in my opinion, from Sing Sing Sing, especially with the jungle drum beat in the beginning.
The kind of Tom
this
stuff.
Song really, you know, even the brass writing reminds me of Sing Sing Sing. You know, Sing 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 is used in movies whenever there's like a really like intense kind of chaotic scene, and it's kind of the climax emotionally. And that's kind of what I get from this piece. It's fun, but it's also pretty intense and epic.
Yeah.
For big band music.
I think that's a good point. Looking at a song like that, where obviously it wasn't written for film or with that kind of storytelling in mind, but its excessive use in a lot of movies kind of influences some of the choices that composers might make for mediums like that. And I think you're totally right. I imagine that Peter was aware of that, and that was probably an influence. But I thought it was interesting how he talked about his influences of this game being... being Henry Mancini is the foremost, because you really, you know, Henry Mancini has such a fun type of jazz music nature, and I get a lot of that kind of fun and playfulness with Peter's music as well. So it's cool to hear that confirmed about that being an influence.
Awesome. Well, now it's another thing we touched on the interview. We're going to play a track from Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, which is a very recent entry in this series, composed by Peter McConnell. Let's take a listen to a track called Cranny Yum. That is two words, Cranny space Yum, composed by Peter. Let's take a listen. Awesome. You guys are just listening to Cranny Yum from Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, composed by Peter McConnell. Man, so much of Peter's music has a devious and demonic flavor to it, and this is totally true. You know, obviously, this is a very different side of Peter McConnell than we've heard. Thinking about, you know, it has that kind of synth quality in the drum beat underneath.
I think devious is very accurate, and you do get that with some jazz stuff, but it is a characteristic that I think is very distinct about his music, and it's something that I think fits really well in the medium of video games, because what I love about games is they really give you the agency to make a lot of choices, or at least give you the feeling like you're making choices and you're living in this world. And sometimes that devious nature, it's almost a little bit empowering. It's like when you're a kid and someone tells you not to do something and you do it anyway. And video games give you that sort of power fantasy. So that devious nature in the music, I think, really fits in games.
Awesome. Well, you know, guys, we had such a great time, obviously, talking with Peter today. And once again, I want to thank Peter for coming on the show, being our first repeat guest. That was really fun. Kind of felt like talking to an old friend again. It was great. Yeah. And also, we had a great time, you know, listening to this music and kind of discussing it with you and sharing it with you guys. Yeah, once again, play and buy Broken Age if you haven't.
Absolutely. It's an incredible game. We've been gushing about the music so much. I've forgotten to kind of promote the game on the show. But I mean, if you are even remotely a fan of those old LucasArts adventures, this game, to me, more than meets that standard of quality. It has some big name actors like Elijah Wood and Jack Black, and it's just, it's a really fun game, beautiful art, great music, and it's funny.
Yeah, so what we're going to do, guys, we're going to play you out with another track from Broken Age. This track is called Shellmount Festival. Once again, thanks a lot, guys. This is the end of our season. We've had a great time, but don't worry. We're going to be back next week with the first episode of season 6. And, you know, if you guys remember, the way we kind of organize these seasons is we always start off a season with kind of a historical look on a topic
more
in video
like
game
an
music.
Editorial. We come at it with a different type of analysis. So instead of talking about a series or a genre, we more look at an aspect of music.
Absolutely. And one quick thing we wanted to mention is we recently released the soundtrack to Pocket Defender, which is an Android game that we composed music for quite a long time ago, and the game was finally released, so you can find that on our original music page.
It's really cool. It combines Russian folk music elements with orchestral rock and even a little bit of metal influence, mm-hmm. So you guys should enjoy that.
Yeah, I think you guys will really get a kick out of that. So thanks so much for joining us, guys. We'll see you next week. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everybody.
Peace out.